Welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Warrior Will. I'm not opposed to hearing Survivor on any day of the week, but why?
Okay. I got a few more miles. I still gotta get through so much worlds in this Ring Fit adventure. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first few steps. I just gotta keep on going, and oh god, my thighs.
I knew where you were going with that. That was good.
Your thighs messed up the classic saying, if the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. It's sad that I have to correct you on that, but okay. So I'm told your name is now Thor. Thor, because it hurts. Moving on. Tyler, tell you Tyler is here.
It is so easy, isn't it, Will? It's funny how those who don't work out, just it's so easy for them to criticize those who do. It's unbelievable.
I'm sorry, which ones of us spent like most of 2019 getting fit to be a professional wrestler? I believe that was me. And I kept going even after my training fell through. I didn't stop until October when the cold snap hit.
See, what year was that, though? That was 2019. Aww. We're talking about the year 2020, Todd.
I know it was a million years ago, but still, it counts.
Oh, also, $5, please, from you, Todd, because I believe at some point in time I said it was going to be Min Min, and then I said I'd do something embarrassing if it wasn't Min Min, and it was Min Min, so $5. Thank you.
First of all, no, we never did that. And
I think we did.
I don't think we ever did. I mean, you might have made the guess that it was Min Min, but I'm pretty sure I might have.
I've declared that many times. Uh-huh. Loudly.
And you've declared a lot of things loudly, Tyler. That's kind of your MO. But Tyler, you of course have the entire library of NEP at your disposal. If you find the clip, you tell me exactly what episode to go to, and if I did indeed bet you $5, I will pay it. And unlike a certain someone, I won't wait a year to actually pay you back.
Hey, that's way too generous. I was more than a year before I paid you back.
Clearly, yes, you were.
It was definitely more.
Yeah.
But right. I did, but I paid you back.
Yes, you did, during a podcast, no less. And I'm like,
it was a beautiful moment.
Tyler finally pays me back.
It was a beautiful moment. Yeah. We shared it together on air.
Gosh. These beautiful moments. Yeah, there have been many beautiful moments this week, and it's going to be a very interesting show. We're going to start off with, what have you been playing? All right, we're going to do this a little differently. Will, I want you to go first. And then me and Tyler have to talk about a game that we've now both beaten, but Will has not. And so we don't want to spoil the ending for Will. So Will will leave. Get it? Will leave. And so we can talk about it and then help him come back eventually. So Will, what have you been playing?
Okay, so it has definitely been quite a busy week for me. I mean, first off, I have actually played the widely divisive Last of Us Part 2, which, again, whatever opinions you have, like, yeah, it's all yours. But so far what I've been playing right now, I mean, it's good. I mean, story-wise, I'm still a little iffy. I will forever curse Neil Druckmann for what he did. But again, it's his story. He's the creator of the story. So, whatever. But still. But overall, I'm enjoying my time with The Last of Us Part 2. And of course, naturally, if I alluded in the beginning, I have been actually got my Ring Fit Adventure. And been doing this, even with my work schedule, I try to keep at least like a 3 times a week. And yeah, this thing is legit. Like, whatever reviews you've seen so far, it is validated. This thing is legit. You will work up a sweat. Your thighs will hurt. And by God, I hate squats. I mean, a lot of people complain they hate squats, and I can sympathize with them. Like, granted, unfortunately, I'm generally out of shape. And so my training level was like at first level 20, but I had to go and drop it down, maybe just because of the adjustment of the leg strap. So just like notch it down a little bit just to make it easier for me. But yeah, Ring Fit Adventure is quite legit. Doing squats, like pressing the rings, it really does give you a workout. I mean, of course, obviously you won't get buff out of it, but if you want to cut lose some body fat, this thing will definitely keep you in good shape. Plus, with helps with the cardiovascular. So overall, it is very, very well worth the money.
So I got Ring Fit as well. They restocked it finally. Hooray! And I was able to get a copy. And I like this is so embarrassing. Like, so I think that I'm in not good shape. Especially now that gyms have been closed for a while, but I wouldn't have described myself as horribly out of shape. So when they were asking me questions in the beginning, I was like, yeah, I'll put the difficulty to high and all that stuff. And I like really like overworked the first thing. Like I had a style, I was doing like, I went through the first two levels and there was the boss fight. And like, I was at the end of the boss fight and I was like, I can't do this anymore. I was getting dizzy. I was like downing water. It was not good. Like I totally overworked. This game is an actual workout. Like even if you're like me and would say that you're, I don't know, not out of shape, then don't overlook it. This is a real workout, especially with gyms being gone. I'm happy that I bought it today. I knew my limits more and I really enjoyed what I did today. You're right, though, Will. It is a legitimate workout. And what stands out to me is that it's just such a great use of the Joy-Cons. The heart rate monitor does not work. It told me my heart rate was like 90 beats per minute or something, which is hot, like I not resting, but like I was beat. Like there was no way I wasn't at 170. Like it was just
really?
I always manage
my heartbeat every single exercise. I'm pretty much always at that 90% at energetic exercise for me. So I think it's like roughly 117 or so.
I just think it's my Joy-Cons because it's giving me like workout percentage 30%. You know, you should be working harder. And I'm like, no, I'm working really hard.
Perfect.
Yeah, but I do think the Joy-Cons I'm using are my older ones. So it's possible that the heart rate monitor is just whatever they use to sense that. Or maybe I'm just not putting my thumb on it right. But something's inaccurate there. But that aside, it's very responsive. It's super, like, it knew today when I was tired at the end, I was doing squats. It, like, when my form was breaking down and I felt it and I was not doing damage on my attacks, it was yelling at me for sure. It's very accurate.
It's like, you got to go hard, Tyler. We got to pump you up.
Yeah, it would hit you with this unsatisfactory like pop when you hit the enemy instead of giving them, like a whack.
Yeah, like I gotta give props as well. Like now, ever since with the whole updates later on in the game, like you can actually change like the language to either be a male, female, Japanese, Spanish, all different languages to basically suit your needs. I really do appreciate like how it just try to like really pump you up, like hype you up, just like, yeah, 3, 5, 4, 3, just to try to like pump you up, which really is very, very encouraging. So I really do appreciate that. Yeah.
Did you see the they have like dance you can do in there, and like you can dance to Jump Up Superstar and the Breath of the Wild melody.
Yeah, I did see the update. Okay. I haven't tried it yet. I've only been doing the mini games of it all, but like do the unlimited presses and all that. But I haven't did the rhythm game yet. I'll probably do it like later on.
If I was to ever get Ring Fit, like that would be the thing I would do the most, because once upon a time in Mexico, also known as my cousin's wedding. No, it wasn't in Mexico. I'm just joking. He had Just Dance on this mega screen that we could all be a part of, and I had a blast doing it, but after doing like, you know, 20 songs, everything hurt.
Yeah.
And so for a while, like I swear for like a month, what I would do is every night I would, you know, go onto YouTube and I would replay all the songs that I remembered that were like varying levels of difficulty, and I would work up a sweat just doing the moves, because you know you're moving your hands and legs around fast, you're trying to do the motions. Dancing is a great workout, and so I would love to do that with Jump Up Superstar and like the Legend of Zelda and everything.
They had Splatoon in there as well.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I do not have Ring Fit Adventure, so right now you guys are probably in more shape than I am, especially after I just ate a half a bag of french fries. So, congrats.
Hey, I ate Wendy's tonight. It's no big deal.
There you go.
Because, like, if anything else, like, I really wanted to say this to you, Todd. Like, dude, do you even Ring Fit, bro?
you got to get good, Will. You got to get good. I remember when Wii Sports came out, and, you know, like, nothing. Like 4 out of the 5 games are, like, not harmful at all, you know? And then you go to boxing, and you're flailing your arms around at full power. And I remember the first night I got my Wii, I already had Zelda, but I wasn't going to play that first. I played Wii Sports, and I'm like, ooh, this boxing is exciting. I could do, like, four matches in a row. Four matches later, my arms are, like, at my stomach, and they're like, I can't move them. I'm like, I went too far.
Yeah. You
know? And they were dead for, like, an hour, because I'm throwing like real haymakers to try and get my character to win. And so I can imagine what you guys are going through, because that's what I went through once upon a time. So, yeah. But I'll see if I can get it. My workout center is allegedly going to be opening up on, like, Sunday. They said the 28th, but we'll see. So I might be able to do, like, actual workouts again. But if not, I'll seriously consider Wii Fit, because I am out of shape. I am definitely not in the shape I was last year, which is my fault entirely, obviously. And the lockdown, but mainly me.
Yeah, the lockdown's been brutal. It has.
Like, I was supposed to... I honestly did quit in October because I had the cold snap, and I really don't like the cold. And then I'm like, okay, by March, you know, it'll be fine. But then March was still cold. It didn't stop snowing until May, and then the lockdown happened. So I'm just like, I'm screwed. This was a mandate by God to get me fat. well, that and my mother, because she just keeps giving me food. Hey, Todd, do you want this food you want to eat? Yes! So, such is my life. All right, Will, I suggest you either mute us or... go ahead and take your headphones off. We will message you in the chat when we are done with our talk, so that you can come back.
Alrighty then. Off to Ninjala. Woohoo!
And Will was never seen again.
He's gone. We can talk about him now.
Alright. The reason we wanted Will to get out of the way, leave the room, was that both me and Tyler, ironically enough, both finished Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, the main story, not the Future Connected. I haven't had the chance to touch that yet. But we both finished the game. Ironically, Tyler finished it before me.
Rare.
Yeah, well, it was a set of things. I had to grind for 2 days to get my level up, and then I was hesitating, and then I got a new game I had to play, and then I'm just like, I hear Tyler beat it, and I was just like, I can't go into the podcast knowing that Tyler beat a game and I haven't yet, so I went and I beat the game. So, we were talking about the end of Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition. So if you haven't beaten the game yet, we really think you should, so you don't get spoiled. Because, this stuff, ooh, wow. Mm-hmm.
It was pretty wild.
It's wild. I've seen wilder, but this was close. And, I mean, I've beaten Xenoblade Chronicles 2 and you haven't, so you don't know how trippy that ending got.
Right. But I do know a crossover, though. The architect and Zanza, because that was cool. Like, I loved how that was the tie that connected the two games.
See, I didn't catch that, so we'll talk about that. But so here's the deal. Okay, what do we want to say? Like, three quarters of the game.
Yeah.
Our enemy is the Mechanus. And they're eating quote unquote humans, and then we find out that they're not actually eating them, they're just remaking them so that they can be Mechanus that don't react that can't get hurt by the Monado, because the Monado can only hurt
it can't hurt Homs.
Thank you. Can't hurt Homs. Then we find out Fioria, who was killed, is not dead. She just had her soul transferred, she had her body repaired to turn into a Homs Mechanus fusion, and had the soul of the Mechanus god, Maneth, transferred into her body. You think this is the weirdest part? You're not even close.
Not even close.
Not even close. So then we realize that this big bad of the Mechanus, Igil, great name, is actually a good guy, because all he wanted was it's relevant.
He's a bad guy.
He is a bad guy, but he does turn it around. He's just tired that his people and his god / girlfriend Maneth, again, still not the craziest part, were basically killed by the Homs and Bionis because of Zanza, who was his best friend, or so we thought, because it's the Monado that is the bad guy. And yes, that means the sword was evil, except it wasn't. Because as we would later find out, is that all of this wasn't crazy enough. The world of the Bionis and Mechanus was created by a station above Earth, because one guy decided to become a god and recreate a universe. And when that happened, two humans became the Bionis and the Mechanus, and things happened.
Good summary.
Thank you. What?
It was so like the trippiest part, right? You're on Prison Island and you beat Dixon. First of all, Dixon, hate that guy.
Yeah,
but
you do know what the first four letters of his name spell.
Yeah. So you beat him, and then like you just randomly are like, "Whoa, we're in space now. This is wild."
Yeah.
And like you're like in our outer space. You're like at Saturn. You're like,
Mars.
Why am I on Saturn? Why am I going to Jupiter? Why am I going to Mars?
Yeah.
And it's because you're basically like the universe is collapsing and Zanza is trying to recreate the entire thing.
Yeah.
And you didn't even mention the most wild part. Alvis, who, first of all, great. You knew what he was going to be like the whole time. You knew he was going to like betray you, but still kind of be cool.
Yeah.
And he's a computer.
Yeah.
He's a computer program. It was so trippy. It was unbelievably confusing.
And to be clear, when we say computer program, we kind of basically mean he's the Matrix.
Yeah, he's basically the Matrix.
Yeah, because your whole world when Zanza and Maneth, which isn't even their real names, recreated the universe, they basically recreated you in a computer program because reasons. Because one of them wanted to be a god. Because reasons, and then
being a god does sound kind of cool. Like in his defense, in Klaus's defense, it does sound kind
of
cool.
But I mean, look at like the other gods of the pantheons. I mean, you got the Greek gods; they never got along. The Romans weren't much better. Okay, the Norse gods were going to get killed by a snake. All right, God was apparently a god of the Christian faith, which is my religion. You know, he had to work hard for 6 days, and then he was like, you know, I got to take a break. You know, so clearly he's not. We're almost getting to sacrilege. Anyway, we find out that our entire world, the entire world of Xenoblade, is a computer program that's been reset time and time again by Sansa's own words. He's reset the whole universe. And that it's up to...
Well, so you're not literally in a computer program, like,
but,
he...
But they
like...
infer that, but they do, but they infer that because of Alvis, because he's like, you know, I follow the will of God, and you are
right,
my
which...
God now, Crom, so make the choice, what do you want this world... Did I say Crom? I'm sorry.
You said Crom.
I'm sorry, Crom. That's just so crazy, I wouldn't be surprised if Crom was there.
Alvis was the administrative computer aboard the ship that they used to recreate the world, that like launched the beam that recreated the world. And then he took on this physical form in the new world. Like the old world was wiped out completely, and then the life that was on the ship survived. That's what you need to know. So Maneth was the girl who was like, "Don't push the button, Klaus."
Yeah.
And Klaus was like, "I'm going to push the button." He became Zanza.
Yeah.
The main antagonist of the game. So it was really confusing. We confused you if you're listening to it, unless you beat the game and you understand it. You might even understand it better than we do. I thought it was trippy. What's interesting is our thoughts on it. And I loved this game.
I know.
Immensely. The story to me, it didn't fall apart, but it definitely lost its luster and became too cluttered once you got on Mechanus.
Yeah.
I felt like the most interesting part of the story was every character's hunt for revenge. And there was... It just... A lot of the stuff wrapped up too cleanly, which is weird saying, you know, how complicated everything was. But what I mean is, my least favorite character in the game, Gatto. I hate Gatto. And the reason that I hate Gatto so much is because... Fiora, right? Fiora being alive was cool. That was a really good twist, and because it coincided so well with what I felt the biggest mystery of the game was, which was, why does the Monado not work against Face Mechon? And when you figure out that's because the Face Mechon actually have Hom's DNA, and that's why great.
You want to have something funny?
Yeah.
I figured that out in like 2 minutes flat.
Really?
Yeah, it was so obvious, because like, it was a Face Mechon, and I'm like, okay, that's weird. It says I can kill all Mechon, and then I remember, I was like, wait a minute, it says I can't work against Tom. So my thought was that it had, like, some kind of generator of human DNA, and they said they were eating the Hom.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right, though. I mean, that was very astute of you, because for me, when it was revealed, I was like, that was right under our nose the whole time, and I just didn't see it, but it was so obvious in hindsight.
And then when they talked, that was the big clue, because, like, none of the Mechon talk.
Yeah.
The Machina, however you say their name, you know, they talk, but they're actually living beings, where the Mechanists are full-on robots. And so when Zord started talking and then the Silver-Based Mechon talk, I'm like, oh, yeah, there's humans in there somewhere. That I didn't realize it was the whole bodies until later, but I was like, oh, they have, like, their brains or their hearts or their personalities transferred. Like, there's Homs in that.
You're right. I see, when he goes, when I turned into this, you're aware that, you know, he was once something else, and this the hunch is that, you know, he was once a person, but the idea that they're actually in there and still alive, you know, that was surprising to me, and I really liked all the build up there, and I liked Sharla being out for revenge, and I liked, you know, the Dundan and Shulk are out for revenge, and Melly is out for revenge. Like, all the characters have these personal stakes in the story, and then after you defeat Mumka Metalface, who was a great villain. The fight between him and Dumban on the Valak Mountain was one of the highlights of the game. I am a sucker for when the characters clash at each other. Oh, yeah. And just watching Dumban dodge him and slash his arm, it was great. Dunban's a great man. But after that, and like you save Fiora, I felt like things kind of started pushing too quickly in a different direction. Yeah. Like, the story became much more, less about revenge and much more about forgiveness from chapters 12 when you save Fiora to 15 when you don't kill Aegil. And then for the final 5 hours of the game, it's like, okay, now it's the story about killing the god of the world. And there wasn't, like, to me, the visions thing was never the most interesting part of the game. It was a cool mechanic, and you were like, that's sweet, this is a legendary sword. And I like that they subverted your expectation, like the idea that the sword and the visions were actually the work of an evil entity was very creative.
Yeah.
But it wasn't explored enough for my tastes. And like, yeah, I felt like the story lost focus and it started pushing too rapidly down the stretch. Wait, how did you think?
Like, and I know this is where we differ, but this for me is kind of the reason why, if I was to rank the Xenoblade games, I would have to put the original or definitive last. Not because the game was bad or the story was bad, it was because you could feel the ebb and flow much more than the other games. I know you never played X, so you won't get it, but in X, it was really more about building up your world, and there happened to be story chapters around it. And it was the shortest story of all the three games, and yet, as crazy as it was, and as bad, or not bad, but as bad as that ending twist was at the end, which I've ranted about it many times, so I won't go into it, but, you know, I still loved everything that led up to that. And then with 2, I loved the game beginning to end, and despite the slow start, where this one, it had a fast start, but it had a slow finish. And, like, at points, it dragged on, and which leads to one of, like, you said, you know, everything ended a bit too cleanly. I agree, because Fiora, who was one of the best twists of the game, 100%. One of the best twists of the game, became one of the things that I just kind of got annoyed with over time.
Yep.
Now, I noted to you last week that there was a conversation between Melia and, we call her the seventh character, that was Fiora, and it just really made me mother-freaking angry. And it was, Melia is talking to Fiora, and Fiora reveals that she is dying because Mayneth is dead. Long story. And, you know, because Mayneth is dead, her body is slowly going to fall apart. Because, again, she's part Mechon, and part human. It's, again, really complicated. And apparently she runs on water.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? And so she's like, I've got to keep going for Shulk, and, you know, I just got to spend a little more time with him before I go. And Melia says the line, I am nothing compared to her. And I'm like, gosh dang it, Melia! You were everything compared to her. Hashtag justice for Melia.
Right? I hashtag justice for Melia, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, and then, even though this was, you could see this coming a mile away, when, at the end, when Shulk says, I want a world without gods, he says it to the Matrix, or Alvis, or what do you want to call him? Mitralvis? Sure. We see a POV shot of this person walking throughout Colony 9, which, for the record, the shot was great.
It
you
was.
You saw the Nopon, you saw the Mechina, you saw the Homs, they're all living
the
together.
The Hyantia.
That was the Hyantia. It was a beautiful thing. You know, that's the kind of, you know, lovely ending you have. And then it's like, everyone, once you figure out it's Fiora and you don't see her body, you're like, oh, she's human again.
Right.
And it's just like, why is she human again? I don't know!
So I looked that up because I... That was the thing I didn't like. When I said everything ends too cleanly, that's what I mean. That's why I hated Gatto so much. Because you find Gatto, right? And, like, Ego was like, Fiora broke my control because of her Hom's memories. You know, he's like, what he says is, we were cutting corners when we were making these face mech on. We weren't deleting all of their memories. But that was a mistake. I'm going to stop cutting corners here. I'm deleting all of your memories. All of them. So he goes ahead and deletes all of Gatto's memories, right?
Right.
And so when you first meet him, he doesn't recognize Sharla, and he's trying to kill you. And I'm like, sweet, I can't wait to kill Gatto. And then, like, you get to, anyway, you fight him twice. And the second time you fight him, you're like, he's not shooting at Sharla. And you're like, why is he not shooting at Sharla? And then Mayna speaking to Fiora comes out and says, because his Hom's heart still has some connection to her. No! We saw Egil delete all of his memories. Like, that's the type of storytelling that I just dislike.
But the heart never forgets, Tyler.
Right. Yeah. Hold the character's feet to the fire. Hold the story's feet to the fire. Like, that was a good... I liked when Egil was like, that's it. You know, I made a mistake here. I'm done screwing around. And it would have made the boss fight so much better and would have made Charla's ending much more satisfying because you wanted her to be with Ryan. Who didn't want her to be with Ryan? They had the chemistry. It was adorable.
Well, and it was getting annoying after, like, the 1,000th line of, oh, Ryan, what am I going to do with you? Ah, ha, ha.
See, I liked that. I thought they were pretty perfect for each other, and that
which is fine. But again, like, and I noticed this like a couple episodes ago when I'm hearing the same battle lines, and thank God I kept trying to turn.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it's just like the same freaking lines. Like, Sharla, what about me? And it's like, oh, Sharla, did you see what I did there? Oh, I wasn't paying attention. Oh, come on! And Shulk's going, ha ha ha! No, Shulk, stop laughing. It was funny the first time, not the 10,000th.
That's just a Xenoblade issue because that was very predominant. One and two, and I agree that's an issue. I just like the character so much that I didn't really mind about in this one.
But no, you're not wrong about Gatto. Although hilariously enough, last week you were like, "Dude, Gatto's dead. She's gonna be with Ren." I'm like, "Yeah, Gatto's dead."
By last week, I knew that he was gonna be alive. But I'm glad that because I'm not an idiot. But I'm glad that I'm glad that he did die in the end. Like, there was some consequence, but it was like, he's holding back this massive explosion. He's just like a metal body in the, like, that wouldn't have done anything. It made no, that didn't make any sense. There was too much convenience. And at, like, with Egil, it was the same thing. Like, one of the coolest things in the game was the vision that you have of him blowing up Bionis. When you're fighting Egil and Shulk sees the vision of, like, in 120 seconds, the Mechana sword will just destroy Bionis. And you're like, wow, I better stop this. You do, and it's awesome, and then you're about to kill him, and Shulk's like, I'm gonna let him go. And, like, the story was so much about revenge, and not that you have to get revenge. I think that there's a smart way of storytelling, and ironically, The Last of Us 2 is the trending game right now. That's the similar thing here. That game's message is ultimately revenge isn't worth it. Xenoblade could have had that same message, but it just didn't have time to build to it. You know, the main hook to me was the character's hunger for revenge, and once Fiora got saved, that element went away, and you were kind of left with, like, the less interesting parts of the story, and then there were some parts that just sort of seemed to come out of nowhere, like Dixon's betrayal. You obviously knew that was going to happen, and I like the way they did that.
And then Alvis, but it's just like I wanted to know, like with Letheria, who again had the creepiest anime style boss. Boss cutscene ever with her fusion with Melia's brother. I mean, that was just creepy as heck.
Yeah,
but. Like, you know, she's like, I was promised immortal life. I'm like, when did you meet Zanta?
Right, when were you promised immortal life? It was very weird.
And Dixon was, you know, one way, and he's like, oh, I'm just doing this for power, and I'm like, what? Because, you know, Zanta said he wanted to rewrite the world, so was you just supposed to be there? And, you know, Alvis is like, yeah, he's the computer program, but clearly Zanta thought he was on his side, and this is like...
Zanta was Alvis's master. Like, there wasn't anything out, but I liked how detached Alvis was. That was a cool reveal. It was weird.
I was glad.
But I thought Alvis they did a good job with. I thought they did a really good job with him the whole way.
It was just, by the ending, it was just like, and this happened in 2 as well, because when you get to the end of 2 and you realize what's really going on, but yeah. So, what was that connection between 2 and 1 you said?
Yes,
the architect?
Right, so Klaus created the world. He was Zanta, but when he created that world, he split into 2 people. So one of him got sucked into, like, a vortex of, like, the new world being created, and then the other one was stayed behind, basically. And the architect is his other half that stayed behind. And, like, so the god, he is the god of both worlds. But that's how he's the interconnecting part of both games. And I think, because I haven't finished 2 yet, I was so curious, so I looked his character up on the Xenoblade Wiki, and there's a scene in that game too that also takes place on that space colony. So it's that's the connection between the two, and I love that. I think that there could be a really cool, like, as the series progresses, that could turn into a really cool thing, like a major story thread, instead of just, oh, this is a cool little thing that happened. That might be the most interesting connector between the whole thing.
I might have to look that up, because I honestly didn't know that. But then again, I played 2 before I played 1, so that's why. I mean, I do know what you're talking about with the whole, like, he's half there, he's half not. I know what you're talking about with that, but I didn't realize that was the same guy. Wow, that is cool.
Actually. Yeah.
And that would explain why Future Connected might link it all together.
So Future Connected, I just started, and I would be surprised if that's what happened.
Well, they said that it teases, you know, connections and the future of the Xenoblade world, but what that actually means, you know, I don't know. Because how does X fit into all of this? Like,
right.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
So, and I know the ending of that game, and there's no architect in that. So that I know of.
Right.
I know of.
Right.
Again, the ending was weird. But
the ending was weird.
The endings are always weird.
Right.
Okay? Let's be honest here. Like, and I mean, 3 or 2 is not much better. I mean, it gets trippy as heck, and it too has a kind of a perfect ending of sorts, and reasons.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to play it again, because, like I said, I, despite my issues with the story, and I won't say that it was a total disaster or anything, I was interested in what was happening. It was much more because I truly liked all the characters. I will say I have one more complaint, and I hate to continue to complain instead of talking about all the positives about the game. But my favorite part about Xenoblade 1 was switching between the characters the whole time. I love mixing up my party. At the end of the game, you're fighting Mechon, like, the whole time. And Shulk is by far the best at fighting Mechon. So from chapter 14 on, I was always playing as exclusively my best party of Shulk, Dunban, and Rhine. And that was a personal choice, but I would have liked there to be more diversity that kind of promoted the other characters. You could get, like, Mechon damaging weapons from them, but they just were not as good as the other weapons that I had for them, and they were wildly ineffective compared to that original team. That's a minor gameplay complaint, but still, I really enjoyed using every character, and at the end they really push you towards Shulk, especially with all the visions. Like, Shulk is by far the best at breaking visions, and you need to be breaking visions against some of these bosses.
I usually stuck with my team of Shulk, Ryan, and Sharla, just because I like Sharla's healing abilities. But it came in handy most of the times. Although I'm sure if I did switch it up, and especially with Dunban, I would have had, you know, better chains and all that. But I liked my thing. I fell behind in levels, and that's what held me up. But once I got to 75, I didn't stop the rest of the game. I was done in 2 hours flat.
Yeah.
From Disciple Aurethia, who I had no problem with after I took out 3 of her Aether spirits and then just combo attacked her to death. So
those things, yeah, the boss battles were all fun. I was giving up levels against them. I think I was level 69 against her. She was like a red enemy, and that was, I love that about the expert mode, because the difficulty, you could custom fine tune it however you wanted, and I felt like that against the final boss, I had messaged you saying the second phase was tough, and that's because I had to level myself up. I couldn't hit him. I just kept missing, and it was very frustrating when you're just missing all the time and you don't know what to do. But also when you solved those problems and you kind of felt like you would overcome the difficulty curve,
yeah,
it was immensely satisfying. I truly loved the gameplay.
Well, the gameplay was good once you got the hang of it. It took me a while, though, especially with the chain attacks. Then again, I was still learning the Xenoblade Chronicles 2 gameplay all the way up to the final boss when I found out I was doing something wrong. And then once I found out how to do it, I wiped them off the mat in no time flat.
Yeah.
But another thing I was mad about was Melia, because she has a key part of the gameplay all about her, or a storyline all about her. Then once Fiora shows up, she's like not even there.
You're totally right.
To her, you barely speak to her. She has her scenes with her brother, which is another thing, which is fine. You know, like the twist with the high Entia was good, but she just disappears. And then she has like the key scene with Fiora, and she basically says, "Oh yeah, I guess I can't be with Shulk." And I'm just like, "Then why the frick did you set up this love triangle, which shouldn't even have had to exist, because we can see that Shulk is into Fiora still, even though she's
right."
Dead.
Yeah, wait, it's not even really a love triangle. It's just like Shulk and Fiora are together. A love triangle is like one character loves one loves the other, and one loves the other. Like, Shulk and Fiora loved each other.
Yes, but Melia fell in love with Shulk.
Yeah.
Don't you remember that key scene with Charlotte where she's like, "I've got your back"?
Yeah, it was unrequited love.
Yeah,
but
it was
unrequited
love. And that was stupid, though, because it's like it's two girls going after the same guy. One guy is only clear of one of them, which is the classic, you know, dunce character, a.k.a. Rex. You know what we're talking about. Yeah, Unia fans out there. And that line. Oh, I know you haven't seen it yet, but there's a line that he says to Naya in response to her love, and I just wanted to hit this kid just repeatedly. I'm like, that's not the point! so why would you set that up if you're not going to capitalize on it? And then that's why when I heard about Future Connected and they go, "Why did you do this?" And they go, "We felt bad for Melia." I'm like, "Well, why would you feel bad for Melia?" And then Fiora shows up. I'm like, "Oh, that's why."
Right.
She had no chance.
Because in Future Connected, it's Shulk, Melia, and Toonopon. And I don't think any other characters are in it, which is great.
That's what we all need in our lives is more Nopon.
And I think you're definitely right. Melia got sidelined more than I think any other character in the end.
Yeah.
But she also, I think that does go back to my complaint about the gameplay, because when you actually think about it, she did have a ton of scenes. Like the whole ending when it's her people turning against the people on the Bionis, turning into, you know, the Telethia. And she, I mean, that's her. Like, she's in all of those scenes.
Yeah,
but it's
she,
just, she feels it, disconnected, though.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's because I wasn't using her, honestly.
Yeah, I used her only during the temple scene when I had to. And I was like, I was trying to figure out her combat system on the fly. And I'm like, why isn't this working? I was like, why is she only summoning these things? I don't get it. So, yeah. But anyway, we did love the game. Like, what would your score be? Like, I gave it a 4 out of 5. What would your score be?
I'd give it... It's so hard. I would say I have to go out of 10, and I'd say 8.5. I was at a 9.5 at one point. It's just I feel like the story at the end was a little. It wasn't what I was looking for. I still really like the story overall, but the ending was not what I was looking for.
I understand. Hey, Will, you still there? I know he's here. I can see him on our screen. Okay, whatever. Well, he'll return. But we shall go ahead and head to the news, because there was a lot. We got a lot to talk about. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. And I think Will's back with us. Will, are you there?
Okay. I was just in the middle of WNA, and let's just say I've earned over 9,000.
Sure, moving on. So first up, we have obviously the biggest piece of news out of the week, which is, of course, Min Min! Yes, our ARMS character has been revealed. It is Min Min, the goddess of Nintendo Noodle Shop, with arguably one of the coolest trailers of the bunch. I'm just calling it right now.
Agreed.
Not the least of which is because of Captain Falcon.
Captain Falcon would slurp his noodles like that. I hate I wanted to punch Captain Falcon. He was the worst.
Yeah. And Min didn't say a word.
God, I hate him. Sorry, audience. I had a
Falcon slurp!
I mean, that's always been a big debate. Like, how you do you slurp your noodles or that? How do you do it?
If you slurp your noodles, you deserve to get punched. You just...
Falcon punched?
Yes!
Anyway, but yes, we do indeed have Min Min. She will be arriving on the 29th, so we're almost there. Which, of course, means that technically Nintendo did hold their word. We are still getting the character in June. I love how they played the trailer with Spring Man potentially getting it first, and then Ribbon Girl ripping it out of him, and Min Min's at her shop, and the others are taking each other out, and she just sleeps in to clean up the mess, you know? And she's going to be a long-range character primarily. She will be able to use her arms abilities and her rotating arm set, so you can do like boomerang attacks, KO attacks, two dragons, including having the lasers, as you would expect. She has kicks. She has blocking attacks, even a kicking deflection attack. And you got to be careful, though, because she's not a close-range fighter. This is an arms character. So, you know, they're winding up when they're at close range, not fighting with regular fists. So you got to be careful about that. But this is definitely one of the more unique characters. And even Sakurai was like, this character took a while to make work because of the very nature of her abilities. So, very good. I'm excited for this. I haven't gotten the Fighter Pass 2 yet. I will eventually, I'm sure, especially once the other characters start rolling out. But Min Min. Oh, yeah, and it's important to note, why Min Min? Well, it's because Sakurai likes noodles. And no, I'm kidding. He asked the creator of ARMS, Mr. Yabuki, which character he wanted, and he goes, I want Min Min. That's decisiveness, ladies and gentlemen. That is a decisive leader for an undecisive age. He said, what ARMS character? He goes, he doesn't even look at the roster. He goes, I want Min Min. Dang straight.
It just seems like the clues or hints were there. I mean, again, ever since it got ARMS was released to the world in that tournament, he won with Min Min against the champ, the winner of the championship back then. And of course, the Party Fest, which came out on top. It's just like it's just everyone, the staff, including the staff in the production team of ARMS, just really love Min Min. And again, they love ramen noodles. They love Min Min. It's just like it was not to love. I mean, granted, Twin Tail is a close second for me, but yeah, Min Min definitely has the popular vote.
Yeah, I was a vocal proponent of it being Min Min, and the reason is just because she made the most sense for Smash. The dragon arm is a perfect idea. It makes her unique and stand out. Her base arms were all very different. She had the reflecting kick. She was probably just her moveset made the most sense to transfer over to Smash. But yeah, I agree with you, Todd. That trailer was phenomenal. Min Min looks like she's going to be broken. Like, maybe not broken. She looked exceptionally powerful. Just imagine trying to get back to stage against this character when Sakurai was using the Ram Rams and he was shooting them down beneath the ledge and then down up above the ledge. And you've got two arms, so you can cover low, you can cover high, you can use a laser beam to shoot one. Like, she has so many options. This character looks incredibly powerful.
Yeah, and you thought that Byleth was a zoner demon. I wonder how Min's gonna take on now.
Yeah. Yeah, she definitely looked like a ton of fun. Her design, man, I always say this about the ARM characters, it's just so good. She has such a good design. And her alt colors are pretty good, too. I do like her light blue and pink color. It's pretty sweet.
The neon colors and just, yeah, even also to give props to the stage as well. Like, while it maybe is just generally basic going to the ARM stadium, like with two launch pads, and of course, like, there's a bit of covering on the top of it. So, like, if you get flying, you can hit on it a chance. But overall, like, the stage is not bad. And I just really, just how that entire trailer was, like, it just really pumps you up. I'm just really reminded back of the theme song, which is like, yeah, it really does pump you up.
The ARMS theme song is, like, deceptively good. I mean, it's not even words. It's, oh, and it's like the music going, and then you see, like, you feel it. You know, it's very much Splatoon-y in that, you know, wah, 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 and you know, it's so good. And we got like almost all the ARMS music in the game, and somebody on this podcast was complaining about that.
Yeah, no, so don't get me wrong, I love the ARMS soundtrack, but The cool thing is having the remixes. Like, the number of remixes is what's most exciting. And we have two remixes. Like, cool. I'm glad they put the whole soundtrack in. But I would have liked to see more. Because, as you said, Todd, the soundtrack for ARMS is so good. And Sakurai alluded to part of the reason why they didn't have more is because ARMS was a fighting game. So the music is already compatible with fighting games. They didn't really have to do too much to transfer or translate it over. But I don't know. I would have liked more. And then I didn't like the Springman Stadium. It's fine. It's just the standard choice. Min Min was the character, so Ramen Bowl would have been cool. Maybe a little bit weird for Smash, but it would have been cool. I think Ribbon Ring would have been the best course. It just has a really unique visual design, and it reminds me of the Electrodome from Mario Kart 8, which is one of my favorite tracks, just the pulsating music in the background. They could have had, you know, the boxes come up, the breakable boxes that would have held items in if you're playing with items on. I think Ribbon Ring would have been a more inspired arena choice, but I'm, you know, you're not surprised by what they ended up choosing. It's fine. I just would have liked more.
Everyone's a critic. Anyway, but of course, the only real downside to this was that we did not get a tease of the next Smash Brothers character. And if you notice the timestamp, this video presentation, whatever you want to call it, was from the beginning of May, and we got it in the end of June. So this video has been sitting for 7 weeks. Ish, and then of course we got an extra 4 days before, you know, the character gets released. So it's like, have they really just been working on Min Min this whole time? Because they even said, like, you know, things could be updated by the time this is over, and you know they say that, but it usually doesn't happen that way.
Right.
And so I really wonder. Then it's like, when are we going to get the next one? Then again, we're still wondering when the next Nintendo Direct is ever going to come around in 2024. So you know, I don't know. But
I don't expect a reveal. Maybe there will be something in July, but I expect the next reveal to be similar to Min Min, like a September Nintendo Direct, and they release the character a week after they announce it.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say, but at least we're getting a new character. It's Min Min, which a lot of people like, and ARMS is being represented, which we all agreed was a good thing. So Fighter Pass 2 is off to a great start.
Don't forget
and
Vault Boy.
I'm going to get to that because I want to talk next about the potential new characters, because a poll was had after the reveal of Min Min. It was by Source Gaming, and over 4,300 people voted on it. And get this, 1,423 characters were selected by these 4,300 people. And here is the top 10, the biggest request is Crash Bandicoot with almost 1,200 votes. So 1,200 out of 1,400 people want a Crash Bandicoot. That's a trend, okay? Number two was Geno from Super Mario RPG, long time request. Number three, and this is where the Vault Boy comes in, Doom Slayer. Because if you didn't see, they had a new wave of the Mii Fighter costumes, including Heihachi from Tekken, and Vault Boy.
That was so cool, man.
That was freaky, but it was cool. From Fallout. Although they didn't say Fallout, they just said Vault Boy. And it's just like, it's
right,
Fallout.
Right.
It's literally a thing. And we know that Nintendo and Bethesda have been working well together ever since the Switch came out, between Skyrim and Doom and Fallout Shelter and all that. So do we know Doom Eternal will come to Switch eventually? So the question is, could the Doom Slayer actually make it into Smash?
I would not be surprised, because again, there's that whole fandom between Animal Crossing and Doom, so it would be a dream come true.
I don't want Doom Slayer, guys. I really don't.
No, neither do I, but we can't rule it out because of the
fact of
Snake and Bayonetta, both M-rated characters with very non-Nintendo-esque fight movesets between their guns and everything.
And with Vault Boy, you know, Nintendo's in disguise. They've talked about Smash with Bethesda before. It's I'd say, honestly, likely. Like, he's one of the likelier picks.
Never know. Anyway, and so 4 through 10 are the following. Sora from Kingdom Hearts, Dante from Devil May Cry, Rayman, Steve from Minecraft, Master Chief from Halo. You ain't getting that. I'm calling it right now. You ain't getting him. Waddle Dee from Kirby, and coming in at number 10, my favorite lawyer, Phoenix Wright. And for all you Waluigi stands out there, you can suck it, because he was at number 12. so you can burn.
People are finally over the Waluigi thing, I think, which is nice.
Thank God. Oh, and another thing. Min Min's arrival in the game definitively proves that all spirit characters are possible.
Right.
Good for Gino. Good for Gino.
Good for Gino and Sigma and certain other characters. You know, you are all on the table, more or less. So, yeah. Like, that was the big thing, was spirits, any spirits, out of range, out of possibility. But Min Min was a spirit, now she's a fighter, anything is possible now. But the assist trophy rule still stands. While Luigi is an assist trophy, he ain't coming to the game, suck it. So, moving on, we had the other big piece of news for the week, which is Pokemon. And Pokemon held another one of their Pokemon Presents events, and in this one, they revealed the mobile Switch iOS MOBA arena battle title Pokemon Unite, which is honestly something I say that they've never done before. Pokemon Company is teaming with Tencent, which we'll be getting to in a minute, and basically it is a 5v5 battle strategy game where, much like a MOBA, you're trying to get as much points as possible over the other team. You will have a wide swath of Pokemon you can choose from. You will start at level 1. And depending on the Pokemon you choose, you can evolve that Pokemon. You'll be able to swap out Pokemon techniques to better suit your style. You'll have Unite moves to go and do heavier damage to your team, or to your opponent's team. You'll be able to capture Pokemon, use them for points, and then at the end of a 10-minute match, the one with the most team points wins. So, and they even played a match with various members of the Pokemon team and content creators, and aside from being infinitely in love with one of the people, I'm not gonna say who, but they were adorable, but it was hilarious how into it they were getting, and they actually played it like a match, even having commentators dictating the pace of the match, which kind of made you excited for it. But I'm curious to see what you guys think, because the internet is decidedly mixed, as they should be, because Pokemon has never done this before. So, Will, I'll start with you. What do you think about Pokemon Unite?
It's definitely a new frontier. I mean, granted, like, there was a lot. The mobile genre has been populated, obviously, with League of Legends, Dota, Heroes of the Storm, all these different mobile games. Now that the Pokemon Company is chipping their head into it, is like, okay. And I know that a lot of people, like, I'm pretty sure there are fans that actually wanted a Pokemon MOBA, because again, who doesn't want, like, have a Pokemon champion in such a setting? Like, again, have a Venusaur, Blastoise, or just all these different Pokemon, like, in battle. I mean, okay, it's definitely something. I mean, from what they showed off and the commentating and all that, I mean, it's, and plus it's free, so I'll probably give it a shot with that. The only thing that is definitely kind of like very iffy is, again, is the whole Tencent Holdings collaboration. And like, I wrote articles on Tencent many times over for the site, and it's just like, they really are going, having out their thumbs in every single pie. Like, now they're working with Pokemon Company? Like, okay. I mean, yeah, from Blizzard to Pokemon to just all these different fields in the gaming industry, like, kind of amassing power and monopoly a little bit there, aren't we? I mean, not just to scare people, but it just seems like, okay, like, how much does Tencent hold? It's just, I'm wondering. But overall, like, I'll probably give it a shot, but I won't hold my breath too much. I mean, again, it is a MOBA. It's really how much you enjoy Pokemon with the MOBA genre. So I'll probably try it.
Yeah, the key is going to be the depth. And for me, this game didn't look like it had that. I do think a Pokemon League of Legends styled game would be fantastic. I think you would have seen a more positive reaction if this was coming to... It is coming to Switch, but if it was like a Switch-exclusive game, or even like if it was on the PC, which they would never do, but if it was, I think that there would be a bigger audience, or a more excited audience for this. You know, you can't really buy too much into how exciting it looked from the video. It's a marketing video. They're going to, you know, look excited. But the idea is good. I do like the idea. I need to see more on the execution. I'm not totally in on it. And like Will, I do have reservations about Tencent. I did a little bit of reading on this because I saw somebody was talking about how they have shared data or helped with Chinese data suppression, or you know, like help the government shut down basically free thought in the past. They've shared people's online information with the government, so that's concerning. But also I've read that MOBAs are really big in China, so this is mostly targeted at that group. You also would have seen the internet less divided if they didn't pull this out and make it a separate Pokemon Presents from last week. I get that it was a bigger title, but it's difficult to say, hey, we have this huge announcement coming. We're separating it from this other announcement. And everybody's thinking, oh my gosh, let's go Johto. Oh my gosh, Gen 4 remakes. And then this is what they get. I feel, again, they kind of are tone deaf on what the fans are looking for. But at the same time, I see the potential in the project.
I'm not sure what to make, because I've only played one MOBA in my life, and that was a DC title. And it was fine, but I really didn't understand the moveset, and so I kind of fell out of it. With Pokemon, I feel like they're trying to incorporate as much of like Pokemon itself into the game, which we've seen with other genres, and it could be cool. I too am worried about Tencent, because I know all about them and their shady, you know, business practices and everything. But does that mean they'll make a bad game? No. And the sub developer, what was it, like T or something like that? Ty Lee or something like that.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember. But they're like apparently well renowned with certain big titles, so you know they're. It looks like it's functional. The question is, will people play? And they are doing the smart thing by saying it's free to start. So they're not charging people to play a game that they may not want to play. So depending on how far that free-to-play thing goes, or free-to-start thing goes, that could help make or break their thing. We shall see. But whether it's tone-deaf or not, I'm not sure I agree with that, because if the Pokemon franchise has proven anything, more than Mario, more than anything else, is that they're willing to experiment with the craziest of things. All right. I mean, Pokemon Snap was such a risk, and it became one of the biggest cult classic games ever. Pokemon Stadium was beloved. Pokemon Coliseum was solid. Pokemon Conquests, where they literally merged, you know, anime with, you know, Pokemon. It was weird, but it was cool. And then, you know, Pokemon Troze, Pokemon Puzzle League, you know, Cafe Mix. Pokemon is the embodiment of trying everything to see what people like. And who knows, maybe they will like the MOBA.
Well, that's the thing. No, you're right. But that's not being tone deaf. That's being willing to experiment. And I respect that they're willing to experiment.
But you're saying that, you said that they're tone deaf because they're not knowing what people want. As much as we, the fans, sometimes know what we want, there's things we don't know that we want. We didn't even know Smash Brothers was an option until it came out, and even the developers were like, no one's going to want to play this. And then they did, and then it came to the US.
Yeah, how silly was that people thought that they wanted to play this? But
no, it wasn't that. It was that they didn't think they would want it because Nintendo had the family-friendly image.
Right, right.
And when they were making, they were like, we're portraying that image by saying that Pikachu and Mario would ever fight. And then it was just like, you forget, we like bloodshed. We're human.
We love those characters, and nobody sees it as Mario bludgeoning Pikachu.
Exactly.
They see it as their favorite characters coming together. And that's what Smash is all about. You know, yeah, even with every reveal, it's like, welcome to the family. It's like a family of characters
that
you're in Smash.
But they didn't realize that back then.
And no, you're right. And I feel like they should have.
And like when we first saw Let's Go, it wasn't the greatest thing ever, because we're like, you know, it's kind of like a watered-down version, but I got it because I wanted to try it, and I had a lot of fun. So I am glad they did Let's Go, even though it was clearly tailored to the casual fan and not myself. The game sold well, so clearly they knew what the fans didn't want or didn't know that they wanted. And so I think they're trying that out here because, again, they've never done a Pokemon MOBA.
Let me clarify, though. When I say they're being tone-deaf to what the fans want, I mean in that they pulled this out of the previous, like last week they did a Pokemon Presents, and when they separated this one, they should have expected that people were going to think this is Gen 4 or this is Let's Go Johto, rather than this is a mobile game. That's where I'm coming from on it. It was the way they presented the information.
That's not a fair accusation, though, because it's not a mobile game. It's a game that you can play on mobile or on Switch. Just like Cafe Mix and just like Pokemon Smile.
But so is Elder Scrolls Blades.
Yeah.
You know, that's a mobile game. It doesn't have the complexity. At least it didn't appear to have the complexity that you would expect from a home console experience. It seemed to be, it's directed at mobile. It's directed at the mobile audience. That's the objective there.
All right, well, let's move on to the other Pokemon story, the one that I totally didn't see coming, and you all need to watch. I am serious about this. This is no joke. So we've talked on the show before about Death Battle, the internet show that puts characters against each other, uses math science to determine who would actually win. They have a spinoff show called DBX. It's no rules, just bloodshed. And their most recent episode was Lucario versus Blaziken, which, if for anime fans, they'll know why that matchup is significant. Also, Pokken Tournament. But they decided to not just do a battle. The person who animated it decided to go full freaking crazy and make a 3-on-2 Pokemon war complete with trainer. And it is one of the most glorious things I have ever seen. I am a diehard fan of Death Battle. This battle trumps a lot of the Death Battles, including the 3D ones, because this is 3D itself. And the choreography of this almost looks like a martial arts film, except it has Pokemon moves. So you have Lucario, I'm going to spoil it, you have Lucario and Butterfree versus Blaziken, Weavile, and Nidoking. Why? Why not? And it is the most insanely awesome thing you didn't know you wanted to see. All right, I cannot recommend this enough. But most importantly of all, they proved definitively that trainers suck. All right, and not that they suck in guiding their Pokemon, they just plain suck. All right, the Butterfree is so loyal to its Lucario BFF that it sacrifices itself to get caught in a Pokeball, which causes Lucario to go crazy and use a Z Crystal to power itself up, which is not how it works, and I don't care. Alright, and then at the end, it does an entire blast attack that basically blacks out the trainer and it rips the Pokeball apart to free Butterfree. Hashtag Butterfree be free. Alright? So, literally, go watch DBX. It is the greatest thing of... It is the greatest Pokemon battle you're gonna see outside the anime. And there are anime fights that aren't as epic as this. Alright? I cannot speak highly of it enough. Props to the DBX team, and as many comments said, whoever animated that fight, pay him double. Okay, it was that good.
I agree. Like, just
no, more emotion. I need you to show more emotion. Will, come on, be like me. You're pumped. This is like, this is anime. Come on, go for it.
Right. So, anywho, like, yeah, I gotta give props to the showing of DBX. Is just, yeah, just that one too. I thought it was just gonna be a 1v1 as they usually do, but no, it's just a full-fledged Pokemon battle. I mean, like, of course, like, we always compare all these great martial arts fight, like, I don't know, like Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris, all these like great classic fighters, and now, like, I definitely kind of see like that same kind of energy in this fight with, again, Lucario's Lucario with the aura and all that, and then Blaziken is, well, Blaziken, just the fire chicken. But overall, just like that fight scene itself, like, yeah, it definitely, I probably even compared, like, probably even better some fight scenes than Ruby, honestly. So
that's high praise, because Ruby has some great fight choreography.
The first few seasons, yes. The later on, comparable. But I digress. But yeah, overall, it's just like, It was very good fan service. And of course, that Butterfree. Yeah, Butterfree going with the clutch. Yeah.
If you didn't love Butterfree before, you're going to love Butterfree now. All right. We're just saying. Oh, gosh. Tyler, you watched it, right?
I did not watch it.
Sure!
I'm sorry.
I gave you the video and everything. I told you to watch it for the podcast. It was 6 minutes long.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a Death Battle guy.
But it's not.
I told you,
it wasn't a Death Battle. It was just a straight up fight scene. It wasn't even like stats and everything. It was 6 minutes long.
I know.
Blood.
It's
there
just
was
not.
Surprisingly, no blood.
It's just not my thing. It was Pokemon, so I would hope there wasn't. It's just not my thing. It's just, if people have their things, it's just not my thing.
Just hear to hear. Tyler's a hater.
Hey! Listen, I have a confession. I think haters are hilarious. Haters, it just, they're unbelievable. They hate their love of, they hate so much. It's just, it's got to be exhausting, and yet they always show up. They always, you have to respect them in some way.
No, not really. Anyway, so be like me and Will, be a man of, or woman of culture, and go to the Death Battle channel to watch the DBX between Blaziken and Lucario. I promise you will not be disappointed. And if you are, you are Tyler, and you are a hater.
So, come on, join me, haters.
Yeah. All right, but a quick side note before we continue on. I have been watching Pokemon Journeys up on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
I am 6 episodes in. I am spacing it out because, of course, they only have the first 12 episodes, and then the lockdown kind of hurt things, and so we're going to get like the next set like in a month or two or whatever. So I'm spacing it out to try to enjoy it. It's very fun. The theme song is killer. I love it. Go needs to grow up really fast. I wanted to hit him so hard during the Score Bunny scene. Oh, I want Mew, my first partner. Shut up! I hate it so much. I actually liked how they dealt with Dynamaxing, even though the logistics of the whole thing literally made no sense. Oh, we fly to the Galar region to go see a Snorlax Dynamax, and then a scene later, hey, we're back in Kanto. How did that happen? Okay, then. So, but it's very fun. I do want to point out one thing that I find infinitely hilarious. Let's think about the Pokemon anime as a whole. What is the one singular problem with Ash?
He doesn't age.
Okay, that's true. That's very true. Okay, besides that, think Pokemon-wise. What is the biggest problem with Ash?
He doesn't catch a lot of Pokemon.
Yes. In a season, generally, he will catch between about 6 to 8 Pokemon. He will usually have just enough to fill up his team. And in Alola, he didn't get his 6th Pokemon until like just before the Pokemon League. And that was Meltan. You know, so he had all his Pokemon and then he got Meltan like right before the end so he could do a 6v6 battle. But and then in the episode, I think it was 6, Go decides, hey, I really like the idea of catching Pokemon. I have Score Bunny now. Let's go catch Pokemon. In one episode, he catches 12 Pokemon that just happen to be there, and they're all the bug types in Kanto, which is really stupid when you think about it, but he literally, and he doesn't even evolve them. He catches Caterpie, Metapod, Butterfree, Weedle, Kakuna, Beedrill, Scyther, Venonat, and Venomoth all separately, and then Pinsir. So right there, he catches all 12 bug Pokemon in Kanto in like 20 minutes. And like some of the times, he doesn't even have to battle them. He literally just throws a Pokeball at them, and they're caught. He doesn't even let Score Bunny weaken some of them. And I'm just like, it's not supposed to be this easy. And Ash is just standing there with Pikachu. He hasn't caught a Pokemon yet this season. And he's like, oh, wow, that's so impressive. You caught all these Pokemon. I'm just like, could have done it yourself. I mean, you're not helpless. Also, they broke the rule of 6. You know what that is, right?
You can only have 6 Pokemon in a battle
exactly.
Party.
And if you recall the... let me think. Okay, I don't remember what number episode, but the episode where he caught Krabby, which honestly he did without weakening it,
right.
The Pokeball disappears.
Right.
And he freaks out, where's my Krabby? And yet with Go, you literally see him catch Pokemon after Pokemon after Pokemon, and he has them like all in his bag. I'm like, this is continuity. You are literally breaking the rules.
Critical. That's an outrage, honestly.
Yeah. Now, the intent, as we would find out, is that he's trying to do what Red did in the Origins anime / the original game, where he wants to catch all 150 original Pokemon, among the others. And Ash is like, I want to be a Pokemon master! And he's like, what's that? Oh, it's so much more than what you're thinking! And we're like, that's not really an answer. But, hey, it's Ash, what do you want? But it's just like, it's hilarious to me, and I know Ash is going to get Pokemon. I've already had it spoiled, like, what Pokemon he gets, and that's pretty awesome. But Go, like, just in one day catches 12 Pokemon like it's nothing. He is not even on the level of Ash, and he's already caught more Pokemon than Ash catches in a season. And yes, I know he caught 30 Tauros in the Safari Zone. That is an outlier. It does not count. So... And I still haven't seen that episode. That's one of the lost episodes for some reason. I've never seen the Safari Zone episode. Even though I know exactly in the timeline where it is, I've never seen it. Thanks,
that's
Pokemon.
Shocking.
I
feel like you would have been on that by now.
No, but it's just like, I can't find it.
There's got to be a way you could bootleg it. It's got to be out there somewhere.
Well, I'm sure it is. I just don't have the time or energy. Besides, I know the result. He catches 30 Tauros. And
right.
Like,
that's true. The end.
League, like, he's a master with it because that's what Ash does. So, anyway, okay, we're gonna step away now. We're gonna step away from Pokemon. I know it's hard. because we do have some other news to talk about, including something that matters a lot to me, The World Ends With You. It has officially been confirmed that The World Ends With You is indeed getting an anime. And it will be revealed at the Anime Expo Lite that is happening on July 6th, I think. Something like that. It's in the first week of July. Sorry, we're almost at the end of June. And this is huge news because, again, The World Ends With You was a Nintendo game to start before it got ported everywhere. And fans have been wanting a sequel, but then this Anime Expo had a poster with all the characters on it. We were like, this is either a game or an anime. And now we're getting the anime, which could lead to a second title, which I am all here for. And we're going to get the first trailer of the game at the expo. I am hype. So, very, very exciting. And if you haven't played The World Ends With You, you can get it on the final remix version, which is on the Nintendo Switch. And it teases the second game, which we all want to be made. So go buy it, watch the anime, show your support. Let's get this game made.
Yeah, I was definitely hoping it would be the sequel, but it was either that or the anime was the rumor. So, I mean, both are very cool.
Yeah, and again, one can lead to the other. So that's what I'm hoping on. Moving on to the other big news, which is Nintendo Switch. As you know, between the Ring Fit Adventure debacle and other recent events because of the lockdown, Nintendo has not been able to produce or ship out their Switch consoles because they're just not able to. But now a Nintendo representative has stated that they are able to do it. They are now back in full production, and they fully expect to be back in stores soon. Now, how soon? They can't say because obviously shipping is going to take a while, and they got to actually get it to the stores, which is also going to take a while. But it is going to happen. The shortage will end, which is good because I'm sure a lot of people want to get the Switch so they can start playing games, especially since the lockdown seems unending. Let's be honest here.
How many days until we lock it all back down?
Not long, sadly.
At the rate we're going at right now with some states, especially looking at you, Florida and Texas,
Arizona,
maybe we're gonna go back into lockdown in probably in 2 months' time. But
yeah,
I was hoping
that
it doesn't.
In 2 months' time, but whatever. Anyway, but yeah, Nintendo definitely wants to bump up their Switch production so that they can have it in stores and online so that people can buy them and buy their games, such as Animal Crossing, which is going to be getting a summer update next week. In it, you will be able to swim. Yeah. You're going to be able to dive. Oh, yeah. You're going to be able to collect things underwater. You can actually collect sea creatures and put them into your island aquarium, which I find is a very cool feature. There's going to be new islanders that you can meet, including Pascal and Gulliver, who apparently is marooned. Not exactly the best picture to put into an Animal Crossing game, but hey, what do you want?
And just for the record, Gulliver always has been, is just now he had the pirate motif. Is it batting down the hatches? Or, just more pirate motif than a sailor.
And this will be a free update. It'll again be happening next week. And then at the beginning of August, you're going to get another summer update. So Animal Crossing is clearly doing their best to make sure that their players, which should be over like 13 million by now, have plenty to do, plenty to have fun with, new things to expect. And of course, for new players, plenty to have right at the beginning of the game when they finally get the game, if they get a Nintendo Switch. So
I'm just really glad now you can finally swim in the ocean. I think it was a prior feature back in the other games, but yeah, just seeing swimming, jump in the pool. Now we just need to actually use the hot springs that we bought in our towns. We can use them, our indoor baths. Nintendo, can you get on that, please? We want to use our baths that we bought.
Yeah. All right. I lied. We do have one more piece of Sword and Shield news, but it's not the one you're expecting. So when the Isle of Armor came out, which we still haven't played, there was a special legendary battle going on, and it was with Zeraora, the legendary electric Pokemon from the last region, and in it, if you were to beat Zeraora a million times combined, you would get a shiny Zeraora sent to you. Well, we've beaten Zeraora 1.1 million times, so we will indeed be getting a Zeraora sent to you via, wait for it, Pokemon Home. So if you don't have Pokemon Home, do go and download the free version so that you can go and get your very shiny Zeraora, which I plan to do. Because I like Zeraora as a Pokemon, has a really cool design, his anime episode was epic, his movie was epic, and I want a shiny Zeraora, dang it. So, there you go.
What a heady play by them to get the downloads. Because they've delivered the Pokemon right to you before. Yep. Like, they didn't have to make it to Pokemon Home.
Right there, Mr. Gift. So, you know, you need to go to Pokemon Home now. Oh, I see how you're doing. I see what you're doing, Nintendo. I see you, Nintendo. I know what you're doing. Yeah. All right, and finally, a somewhat contradictory story, but one that we still need to talk about. A report is coming out that says Nintendo is going to be moving away from their mobile titles. And as you think, wait a minute, Todd, just in the last week or so, Pokemon Company has announced, you know, basically three or four mobile titles. Well, that's the Pokemon Company, which is not directly associated with Nintendo, as Pokemon Go proves. So it appears that after the lukewarm reception of, like, Dr. Mario World and
the negative reception of Mario Kart
Tour and everything, and yet the hits that were Fire Emblem Heroes and Dragalia, Nintendo might be stepping away, which is, we don't want to say it's not unbelievable, because let's be honest here, what did they announce recently? Tour was it. Tour was the last game they released, and they did it like right on top of Dr. Mario World, which was kind of a bad sign already, and then all of a sudden, hey, this is, you know, hey, we're at the end, which A is sad. B shows that they really didn't really put the best effort. They didn't put the full Nintendo effort. All right?
Right.
Let's be honest here. They didn't put the full. They did it at the beginning. They did it at the beginning because they had Mario, then they had Fire Emblem, then they had Animal Crossing, and then they slowed down a bit. And then it took us a while to get the next game. Dragalia was a surprise hit. No one expected. And, you know, then, you know, just kind of petered out from there. There's so much potential out there. We've outlined it on previous podcasts, even with us each picking a game that could work on the mobile platform. But they just stopped. Which could be because they are more focused on Switch, which is the clear moneymaker, more than likely. But again, this wasn't exactly the best Nintendo try.
The reports have been saying that Nintendo hasn't found the success that they were hoping to find on mobile, and therefore they're backing away. And I think that this is a mistake, but I think that their approach to mobile has been a mistake. Fire Emblem Heroes was by far the best mobile game they made. And I do think that a large part of that is because it appealed to the core fan base. It was pretty easy to get the premise. It was gather your favorite characters, put them on a team, and then go win some battles. But the main thrust of the game was all the characters are coming together and you can collect them. That was a really good premise. The other ones have just been half-baked versions of core gameplay experiences. They're not really going to... For Mario Kart Tour, for instance, they probably expected this to be a smash hit. It's Mario Kart, and it's on your phone. You can do whatever you can play. The way that they structured that game was so poor with the exceedingly high prices for character unlocks that you're playing against computers and not opponents. The game came out, and it just was not a very good game. That was problem number one. But problem number two is that it didn't really speak to the casual audience like they had hoped. It was almost felt like a new Mario Kart game in a sense. And I think they would have been better off re-releasing Mario Kart 64 on phones. There's a nostalgia around that game. People love that game. People would have lined up to buy that and play that game. I think just going that route would have been far more successful than developing this half-measure game that's got weird firewalls and just frustrating controls, and it's not the Mario Kart that you know or remember. It didn't have that appeal, and you can say that across the board, really just about every single one of them. I will say Dr. Mario World was fairly good. It's just Dr. Mario is such a niche franchise.
I love that game. I mean, I legit loved it. It was one of those games where it was literally it and Fire Emblem, if you really think of it on the objective level, they're games you can play without spending a dime.
Exactly.
I chose to because I wanted certain characters and I was tired of not getting the 5 stars like a couple other people who sacrificed their lives to the gods multiple times over. But I learned to just deal with it and love the bomb and have a whole bunch of orbs on standby just in case. Hashtag I'm at over 250 right now. So, and then with Dr. Mario, I had no urge to buy another Doctor character. What did I care? I didn't need it. And then the puzzles got harder, which I appreciate. It's a fun game. I haven't played it in months, but it was fun for like the first, I don't know, month or so that I played it. I really liked it.
Yeah, go ahead, Will.
I also agree as well. Like, also, we're going to Dracalia Lost because, funny enough, I actually just watched it, Gigook's video of the gacha games and just how compared to like other gacha games right now on the mobile front. I mean, again, like, Dracalia Lost is actually pretty tame as well. You don't actually have to even spend money on it just to actually get free units. I mean, it's kind of like with similar with Fire Emblem Heroes, they give you free summonings, free materials, so you don't really have to. I mean, it's not like as, like, exploitative of customer base, like with Fate Go, as like the other like really heavy gacha games. And regarding to Nintendo's ventures, as if the reports are true, then yeah, it's just like there is something they got again, Fire Emblem Heroes, and yeah, even to some extent, Animal Crossing, Pocket Camp was some to extent, but it's just. There's just something that's just not hitting on it. Like, what is it that they need to like capture? And I feel like they kind of missed that mark. I feel like,
yeah. And I think Todd, something that you had said triggered this thought, and I think it's very accurate. The other games, the Fire Emblem Heroes and Dragalia, have clear thrust. There's, you will spend money on this game because if you do, you will get your 5-star mark. Dragalia is the same thing. You'll get this cool character with a great design that you like that'll help your gameplay. With Mario Kart and Dr. Mario World, it's like, you're gonna get this weird version of, you're gonna get baby Dr. Wario, you're gonna get baby Dr. Rosalina or Goomba Stack Doctor. Nobody's spending money to play as Goomba Stack Doctor. There's no financial thrust there. There's no way they're going to get people to spend money on something so insignificant as baby Dr. Wario. Whereas the games that have been more successful have had clear benefits for spending money. I think their best option on mobile is to use that back catalog. I think a subscription service for old Nintendo games would do really, really well on mobile, and I think that abandoning it is undoubtedly a mistake because it's just everybody has a phone. There is a way to tap into it. They just have not done a good job of doing it.
Yeah, it's very much a case of creative and how they handle the franchises. They started off horribly with Super Mario Run. They thought that, you know, Mario would be their saving grace, and right off the bat, and everyone would pay to play Mario. No, that's not how it works, especially with an endless runner that we have to pay for just to get more levels. Who wants to do that when there's other ones you can get for free? Fire Emblem was the surprise because it's like, oh, how is this going to work at a small scale? And then they made it work, and then they kept adding to it, like unlike Animal Crossing, over time. Pocket Camp was a middle ground where they probably expected the Animal Crossing fan base to flock to it, and they kind of did, but because of the somewhat limited nature, it wasn't as big as they thought, and then of course that led to the New Horizons, which ironically fed people back into Pocket Camp, which I'm sure they didn't expect, and then so on and so forth. They need to find the middle ground of, you know, making a game that is enticing to players, giving them something that you would want to spend money on, and then go from there. And there are other franchises, again, we've outlined them in the past, that could work with this if you give them the chance. But if you just abandon it, then you're saying, oh, well, we tried. No, you didn't try. You tried the minimum amount in some cases, and it backfired on you horribly, and now you're trying to run away. Don't do that, Nintendo. You've failed before. This is literally your history. Think about it, all right? What was the first NES? A failure, because you made like this really complicated system that no one wanted to play. Then you made the grand black box. You showed it. They sold it. You got it. SNES was awesome. Then he went cartridge with N64. It sold well, but not as good as PS1. You did GameCube. Okay. Don't forget Virtual Boy. We don't like talking about it. The Wii. Awesome. Wii U. Not so much. Back to Switch. You're back up again, and on it goes. All right? Failure is in your blood, but the point is that you always rise up from the failure. You never really make the same mistake twice, which is something that not a lot of people can say. So take the failures. Reorganize if you have. Take a couple months off. Just say, hey, let's take a break. Let's focus on Switch. Get working on those games that need to be announced to come out, and then come back to mobile. We'll wait. Phones aren't going anywhere. Trust
right.
Us. They're going to be around for a little while longer. So, obviously, this is just a report. Nintendo has not said anything on this matter, and things could, of course, change, but they definitely need to reorganize, refocus if they're going to make this work. We shall see. All right, moving on to our final topic. In lieu of me and Tyler and only and me and Tyler beating Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, glares at Will, we're going to be talking about video game endings. Because, as we all know, in television, in movies, in books, and in video games, the endings matter. And the best games, the true legends of the gaming world, are the ones that have the truly definitive endings when they are appropriate. Obviously, we're not talking about, like, Tetris or Asteroids or any of this, the classic games where you're just supposed to, or Smash Brothers. I mean, that's not really an ending at any point in time. But the real games, like the RPGs, the action games, the sci-fi shooters, the side-scrollers, the Shantaes, you know, all of them, you know, those ones that have an ending, which ones resound with you the most? And we're going to deal with this in a Nintendo discussion. I'll go first, because I'm going to pick one that I'm sure all of you are going to be shocked about. I mean, hold on to your seats. I'm going to be talking about Fire Emblem. Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I was going to do Xenoblade, but we already talked about that earlier. So, I loved the ending to Fire Emblem Radiant Dawn. Because, unlike many Fire Emblem games, this was a true two-parter. Now, we've had two-parters in a loose sense, like with Thracia 776 or Binding Blade Blazing Blade, which technically was a reverse because they had the sequel before the prequel. Whatever. And so on and so forth. But with Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn, we had a true two-part ending, or two-part game series, and the ending felt real, because you're like, you've beaten the god, Ashera, and you're like, what do we do? Because not unlike a certain other game we just played, you're in a world without gods, basically. And it's like, what happens here? And so you do the traditional, you know, where's all my characters going? You find out that, you know, Alencia, the great queen that she is, led Crimea to a golden age. You know, Sanaki, the brat, she led Benyon to a golden age herself. We find out that Makaya is actually Sanaki's sister, and she had fake died in the Serenus Forest Massacre, and she was whisked away to Dane, blah, 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 blah. And then, of course, there's the ending for Ike. And you're like, well, how are they going to end it with Ike? Well, instead of like a small box, they have this beautiful illustration of Ike with his sword. And it goes, there is a legend of a swordsman that is spoken throughout the land, a legend of the man named Ike who helped change the world. And even though he left this world to go see new adventures and blah, 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 anyone who says his name has a smile on their face. And I'm like, that really impacted me.
Because, I agree. That was such a beautiful ending. You have to look up the direct quote, because the direct quote is I'll get on. I'll look up the direct quote. Continue.
Yeah, fine. And then put it in the chat. I will say it because I am the Ike stan here. Anyway, the reason I've always liked Ike was it was because Ike to me was the best of the lords, because he wasn't a lord. He wasn't. He had no royal blood in him at all. He wasn't some abandoned child of the plains like with Lin. He wasn't, you know, a lost king that had to come back and save his world. He was, quite literally, a common man. And a common man who wanted to do the right thing, who stuck to his guns and his beliefs no matter what, who, you know, who would not afraid to challenge gods or apostles or senators or dragons or anything. And the fact that it was this commoner, this mercenary, this man with a sword that he should have wielded with two hands, but he always wielded it with one, he was the one that impacted the world the most. He was the one that every time you said his name, you smiled, because you understood that more than Alencia, more than Makaya, definitely more than Makaya, more than Sanaki, more than the Lagus Kings, Ike was the one that saved the world not once, but twice. He was the one you remembered, because he was the one who came up from literal nothing, but the son of a mercenary commander, and he changed the world because he knew it was the right thing to do, and he knew he had to save the world before these other people who had no true consideration for it were going to destroy it. I love Ike as a character. I have aspired to write characters like Ike, but with my own twist, of course, and he will always be the best Fire Emblem lord. Fight me, Tyler.
I can't find it in text, but I found the YouTube video. And you have to mention the best part is in my opinion, what makes it so emotionally impactful is that after spending 200 hours with this character, the final image you see of him with his face, like, turned, his back turned, he's walking into the light, it's his younger self. It's the Path of Radiance, young Ike. And you're just like, man, we've come so far.
Yes.
But it's, in the days long past, a young man strode the lands of Teleus. He was simple yet true, his deeds brave and noble. He reunited two races long at war and healed the hearts of a goddess long gone mad. Ask any you meet, be they young or old, Beorc or Laguz, of a hero named Ike, and you'll receive a warm smile and a tale or two of friendship, courage, and honesty. And that's it. That's the character right there. That's just Ike in a nutshell.
I'm not crying.
All right, try. I'm getting misty-eyed.
It's beautiful.
I'm not crying, man. What's wrong
Ike is
you?
The best.
It's just, and it's the wordplay. It's not even like they could just said, like, this is the legend of Ike, a man who blah, 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 blah. But it's like, no. Roam the land of Teleus, ask Bjork of Laguz, and you'll get that warm smile and a tale or two of friendship. You know, that's who he was. He literally was the unifier of races. He brought lands together, and he united them against common goals, whether that be the Mad King Ashnard or the Mad God Ashera. That was who Ike was, and Ike was awesome. And so that's why he's still my favorite lord and one of my favorite video game characters of all time, and why Path of Radiance and, to a lesser extent, Radiant Dawn are some of my favorite video games ever, because I love the story of Ike and everywhere that it led me.
Yeah, so. No, I agree with you. Like, Ike's not, I wouldn't say he's my number one favorite lord, that's Dimitri, but like, and I don't think Ike's got a crazy character development, but like, you can't not love him. He's awesome. He's such a great character, and that ending is the perfect way to write out his character.
All right, Tyler, why don't you tell us your favorite video game ending?
So, we probably talked about something similar before, because I always go to Wind Waker for my Nintendo favorite ending. I love that ending. Just the whole portrayal of every character, especially Ganondorf, it's great. But I'm going to go on a different route and go with Luigi's Mansion. Not as complex, I would say, as Fire Emblem's ending, but It's so beautiful and just kind of touching as Luigi kind of frees Mario from the portrait. He sees him shoot out and it's very comical and you're laughing, but Luigi starts crying. And it's just such a beautiful scene of the brotherly bond that they share. The journey that you've gone through to get there has been charming and very Nintendo-like, but I don't think before that we've seen just how close the bond between Mario and Luigi is, and just seeing Luigi's tear rolling down his eyes as he sees his brother that he loves finally freed and returned to normal. I think that's one of the most simple yet memorable endings in Nintendo history.
An interesting pick.
Am I allowed to say now?
Yeah, oh, sure.
Man, like, I'm basically trying to, like, go through a very log of, like, some things that really, like, really... I admit, there was some in-game video game endings that actually made me legit cry. And, like, even outside Nintendo's library, I mean, just for a quick mention is, like, the one that I feel outside Nintendo had a very good significant ending was the original Persona 3. Which, if you know the ending for 2 Persona 3, then you get, like, why that sacrifice, that self-sacrifice in the end to basically stave off the death of God from destroying the world is just, I don't know, that ending of Persona 3 was very quite significant for me.
Persona 3 on a Nintendo system?
It's not, but only of Persona Qs. And I know, but again, I just wanted to mention as a brief mention. I know.
Right. At least you didn't say Skies of Arcadia.
Don't make me, because it was on a GameCube, but I digress.
Oh, that I know.
But, yeah, I'm trying to, like, really think what game really had a great significant impact, I mean, in recent years. I mean, the first choice I was going to say at first was definitely the original ending to Super Mario Galaxy. Because,
that's a good one, I almost went with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, when I, like, remember even back then on the Wii days that I, like, once you go collect all these stars, even, like, in the basic story, and if not going full completionist, once you go face off against Bowser once again, collecting all these stars, going through these mini galaxies, even throwback galaxies, I think my video is in Galaxy 2, but like once you hit that moment and then have that orchestral hit and finally face off Bowser one last time, it's just like, yeah. And with Rosalina at the helm going at it, like you feel that, like that tenseness that, of course, this is the final level. Like we faced Bowser many times before, but this time it just like, it really, really hits you. And of course, naturally when Bowser's planet becomes a black hole, all the Lumas basically sacrifice them, like chip in, including your Luma, like, what are you gonna do? Don't do it! Don't do it! And the Lumas basically say, like, basically plug up the black hole, and yeah, like, welcome to Super Mario Galaxy! It's like, oh man. And of course, you see that lone Luma at the end, and just like, something that really feels like a very feel-good ending that, like, Mario games have always seemed to have that Disney effect, like, addressing have a happy ending as well as a deeper meaning. I mean, the most other ending I probably can give similarity to is probably is with Odyssey, but Odyssey is on a much more humorous scale, which I kind of like as well. But yeah, it's either be Super Mario Galaxy, but also like the recent memory for me would be, I honestly believe Splatoon 2's Octo expansion would definitely be one of the better endings of the game. Even, yeah, I think either Octo expansion or the original Splatoon 1, just that there's that somberness, like once you see those credits, like rescuing Inkopolis and also saving everyone from an Octo expansion, just like especially with that credit music of Into the Light with the Octo expansion. I don't know, I just wanted to cry at that ending. Because, like, yeah, just having see Pearl Marina just so, almost just loving each other, just hugging to the point, and then you see Agent 3 with the cam, it's just like, just something just so, it's so adorable. At the same time, it's just like, yeah, I just saved the world, I saved it in Godless, and just, like, going with that song of Into the Light, it just works so well. That ending just really stuck with me. So, yeah. There's really a lot of games, like, so it's basically Super Mario Galaxy or the Octo expansion ending that I gotta give props to.
Interesting. I also think if I was to make one that was also impactful, it'd have to be Twilight Princess, because
thought that would be your favorite one.
Well, who doesn't love Midna? And I mean, she's awesome, obviously, and stunning, as we were to find out. And then she breaks the mirror to make sure that Link's world is safe, which is like the ultimate sign of love if you really think about it. But of course, no! Zelda gets him, apparently. You know, hashtag justice for Midna, right next to justice for Melia. You heard me. But, no, that was a good ending, too. Trying to think of another one. I did like Breath of the Wild's ending. Because
all the Zelda games had good endings. Because, I mean, Ocarina of Time's, I love... Yeah. Pretty much all, yeah. I loved Ocarina of Time's ending. I like how there's like a melancholy to it. You don't really expect it in Nintendo games, but like having Link put the Master Sword down, it seals, you know, he seals the world off, and now he's got to go back to being just a normal kid again. And you're like, well, how's he going to do that? Yeah. You know, he can't do that. It's just not possible. So there is a little bit of sadness to it as you see how happy the world is, and that leads into Majora's Mask, where you know, young Link is out there exploring the world on his own and trying to find, you know, his guide in Nabi. There's definitely some darkness and emotional power there.
You do realize the irony of that whole ending, right? Link would have found Nabi if he just learned to listen.
Yeah.
But yeah, there have been a lot of good endings, and Nintendo, as one of the master storytellers in their own right, have done some great endings. The Paper Mario franchise has some good endings. Especially,
I didn't want to talk about Thousand Year Door, but that was another one that when you put the topic in, I was like, that was the first one that came to mind, actually.
Even Super Paper Mario.
Yeah,
I love Super Paper Mario.
With Timpy and Timpani and all them, and Count Black, and how that ended, like that was surprisingly good. And, like, Nintendo does really good endings, and that's why we were happy, me and Tyler were happy about, you know, the ending of Xenoblade, even though it really weirded us out at some points. And, like, Fire Emblem Three Houses, the various endings that you get there.
Yeah, Dimitri's ending is, oh, I love it. Love it.
So, like, there's a lot. So be sure to tell us what your favorite endings are, across Nintendo franchise, and just for Will, I suppose they could do other franchises too, fine, whatever. But Yeah, so let us know. And with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler!
Oh, I'm not ready this time. Sorry.
Chalk.
Hand up. Hand up. I was not ready.
That's why I'm the host.
Yeah. Well, then do some hosting and just kind of spitball while I pull this bad boy.
So let's ask the real questions here. Who is better, Binda or Melia? So I know what you're thinking. This is literally darkness and light here. Uh-huh.
How excited for you for the new Pokemon Snap? 71.4% of you are super excited. 14.3% of you will probably get it, and 14.3% of you are not interested.
Yeah, I bet you, like, really, full real talk. I bet you that those 14% weren't alive during Pokemon Snap. Like, think about it. I mean, it's 20 years old, so that's not exactly the hardest guess to make. Because if you haven't played it, you don't get it. You don't understand why we are where we are standing this so hard. So, if that is you, I understand. If that's not you, then you're just a hater. So, yeah, there is no other. There is no middle ground here. But that's good. I'm glad a lot of people are signing about it, because obviously after 20 years, you're risking the people like remembering and whether this will sell well, which is obviously a problem with movies nowadays. Outside of Bill and Ted, because we all needed that in our lives. But be excellent to each other. Party on, dudes! Whoa. But yeah, so we won't do a poll question this week. We're gonna give you the week off. Unless we want to do one about Min Min.
Nah, that's all right.
Nah, it's okay.
Is Min Min the win-win?
Is Min Min the win-win? Yes, no, or slurp.
God, I just hated Captain Falcon even more than I already did.
Okay, I do want to note one thing. That apparently for that, and Sakurai noted this, they actually got the Captain Falcon voice actor, who is apparently the voice actor of Vegeta in Japan, voice that scene, which you really don't think you need to him to voice, except I guess you needed Captain Falcon slurping sounds?
Yeah, right?
Because he's like, we hired him to, you know, voice this. I'm like, he didn't say anything. He was slurping, and like, Tyler, did he exhaled? You tell him you couldn't, like, edit what you had to stuff like that? I mean, you had to hire the Vegeta guy? I mean, what was his rate? Over 9,000!
Here's one more thing. I started Future Connected. You will notice it right away. I think it's the same voice actor for Shulk, but it's 10 years later, and he sounds different. He sounds very different.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, like, it's very... You're like, wait, is that the same... Is this proto-Shulk? What happened to Shulk?
Well, it's just like, I'm sure his Jenna Coleman sounds just a little bit different, because, I mean, 10 years is 10 years.
Yeah, you know what? Melia sounds exactly the same. It's weird, but Shulk sounds very different.
I'm really feeling it.
Shulk, what's wrong with your boy? Oh, I know what's Shulk about, Melia. I show exactly how he
I actually like the take on the character. I wonder if it was intentional. He sounds like he's a little more, like, calm. And who wouldn't be a little more calm after saving the world and
getting your girl back and
ensuring everlasting peace?
If that.
Sorry, Will. Spoiler alert, but yeah, you don't. Shulk does win in the end.
Future Connection kind of spoiled already.
Right! So we know, I mean, guaranteed two characters live. So if anything else... See, they could have just... Never mind. I'm not going to... That's another topic. But I'll definitely be on the lookout for that. I'll be playing it tonight or tomorrow, regardless. But do let us know what you thought of everything we talked about today, including Min Min and Pokemon Unite. And are you excited for the World Ends With You anime? Are you going to... If you don't have a Switch soon, are you going to be getting it with the Nintendo restocks coming? And, of course, what video game endings meant the most to you? Do let us know. So, for Tellius Tyler and Warrior Will, I am Triforce Todd. And ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lies. You made it to the end of the level. So, slurp! Raise the flag!